could sit and close her eyes and use her imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, it's radio's outstanding theater of thrills with Suspense. But first, let's enjoy a little adventure out west, shall we, with Hopalong Cassidy. Hopalong Cassidy came to Mutual in January of 1950 after early day TV screenings of the 1930s films had made the character a national sensation. In 1934, Harry Sherman got film rights to the pulp western stories of Hopalong Cassidy, and he hired William Boyd, a silent screen veteran, to star. The radio show Hopalong Cassidy was a distinctive cowboy detective show, where listeners seldom knew the identity of the evil ones until Hoppy tripped them up and brought them to justice. Hopalong's companion in adventure was grizzled old California Carlson, played by Andy Clyde. First heard Sundays for General Mills, Cassidy moved to Saturday on CBS in 1950 through 1952. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear with Hopalong Cassidy and Hoppy Takes a Chance from February of 1950. Another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
Major Bose, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Mar, Jamis, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, Vodio, Dodio, Do. Radio, I miss you so.
It's Hopalong Cassidy. With action and suspense, out of the Old West comes the most famous hero of them all, Hopalong Cassidy, starring William Boyd. The Ring of the Silver Spurs heralds the most amazing man ever to ride the prairies of the early West, Hopalong Cassidy. This famous hero thrills his 60 million fans with action and dangerous adventure. In the role of Hopalong Cassidy is the popular star of the motion picture series, William Boyd. And appearing as that laughable old character, California, is Andy Clyde. Now to our story, Hoppy Takes a Chance. September at the Bar 20, like all cattle ranchers, is a happy month for the line riders. The lonely cowboys whose duty it is to patrol the boundaries of the ranch and see to it that the outfit's stock stays on the reservation. It's a happy time because it marks the end of the season for them and the friendly atmosphere of the ranch house just around the corner. But Bob Cranston was different from the rest. There was a frown on his face as Hoppy rode up to him on the ridge south of the Bar 20 ranch house.
Hi there, Wally. How's it going?
Can't complain, Hoppy.
Good. I figure on sending you out at sunup tomorrow. Make a circuit of the ranch boundaries, run down the strays, and kick any of Salinger's cows back onto their own territory. Take you a week or so.
Okay, boss.
How do you like the new job?
Fine, I reckon. Wondered if I might keep right at it on through the winter after cutting out from Brandon.
You mean you want that winter job?
Sure, why not?
Bucking the snowdrift, running down weak dogies in a blizzard. Most of my boys yammer like a stuck pig when I hand them an assignment like that.
Well, I don't know. I ain't much of a hand around the ranch house. Like to be off by myself. I don't mind the cold. If you'd give me the job, I'd sure work at it, Hoppy.
Well, brother, if you want it, you get it. Come on, Dobber, let's get back to headquarters. Sheriff, what are you doing here?
Oh, just dropping by on a friendly call, Hoppy. You know Shelby Selinger here?
Sure. Hello, Mr. Selinger. Have a chair.
Thanks. How are you, Cassidy?
Great. Just sent one of my line riders out to hustle your stock back on the reservation. Seems an awful lot of Circle C cows like Bar 20 grass better than they own.
You save your rider a lot of work, Cassidy. I sold them off last week. I needed the money.
I see.
Yeah, Mr. Selinger got payment before delivery and shipped $12,000 out by stage day before yesterday, Hoppy.
Yeah.
Pay off a loan on his ranch.
Yeah?
It didn't get very far.
What do you mean?
About as far as the blind turn on the stage road. Road agent shot the driver outright.
Wait a minute. Clem Yates was guard on that stage.
Shot him down in cold blood.
Clem? How could anybody...
Yeah, that's the way we all feel, Hoppy. Folks in town are ready for a lynching.
You got any leads?
We know who it is.
His name's Johnny McIver.
Is that so?
Yeah.
We talked to the only passenger on the stage, a girl named Van Richards. She described him for us.
Who is this McIver?
Young fella, about 25 or so. Just got out of prison. Came through this part of the country a few days ago looking for a job. We wondered if he came by here.
I'll keep on the lookout for him, Sheriff.
The townspeople have put up a reward.
Well, if he shot Clem Yates, that's all the encouragement I need.
We can sure use your help, Bobby.
You'll get it, Sheriff.
Thanks. Bye.
Goodbye. California.
Hiya, Hoppy. I was just frying up half a dozen eggs here to tide me over till dinner.
Forget your stomach for once.
Hoppy, eggs is brain.
I don't need your brain. I need the seat of your pants and the saddle right now.
Watch out.
I want you to ride down to South Ridge and pick up Bob Cranston.
You mean the new hand you put on yesterday?
That's right. I want to find out why he calls himself Cranston when his real name is Johnny McIver.
Now back to Hopalong Cassidy and our story, Hoppy Takes a Chance. Two men have been murdered. One of them, the beloved Clem Yates, when the mail stage out of Baker's Crossing was held up and robbed by a masked bandit. The sheriff and the townspeople are sure the robber is Johnny McIver, a young ex-convict. And while they scour the country for him, Hoppy is talking to him in the main room of the Bar 20 Ranch House.
You've got to believe me, Hoppy. I had nothing to do with this. I didn't...
Take it easy, Bob. I'm not accusing you yet.
How come you changed your handle, Sonny? Seems to me we hired a hand named Bob Cranston.
I told you, California. People just can't deal an ex-convict a straight hand.
I can understand that. But you didn't need a new name around here. We take a man for what he is, not what he used to be.
I wish they were all like you. Mr. Selinger didn't look at it that way.
Selinger?
Yeah. When I first got to town a few days ago, I hit him for a job.
When was that?
Wednesday afternoon.
And the stage was held up that night at 8. What did Selinger tell you?
He told me to come back about 10 o'clock. Said he'd let me know then.
So you went back, huh?
Yeah, I started back from town about 7. Didn't see anyone till I got to that place where it fords the creek. You know, there's a grove of cottonwoods there.
Yep, I know the place.
There was a fire going and a couple of men boiling up some coffee. They said they were from Selinger's ranch.
What did they look like?
One of them was heavy set, wore a pair of side whiskers.
That'd be Sam Wellman.
Who?
Selinger's ranch foreman. What about the other one?
He was red-headed, kind of short.
Yeah, that's Red Conroy. What happened then?
They told me Selinger wasn't back to the ranch yet. Asked me to have a cup of coffee with him. It was pretty chilly, and I figured a cup of coffee would taste good, so...
So you accepted the invitation?
Yeah. They said Mr. Selinger had passed right by there on his way back. Well, we sat around a while, then the redhead pulled out a pack of cards and suggested a game.
Uh-oh. Them fellas are sure death at poker.
Huh?
Red and Sam are a couple of pretty slick poker players. How much did you lose?
I didn't lose. I won $300.
Sonny, you're wasting your time as a cowpoke. Anyone who can skin them coyotes that draw poker is...
Wait a minute, California. You pretty good at poker, Bob?
Oh, just fair. They play pretty stupid. I took $100 pot with a pair of tens.
Huh? Playing again, Red Conroy and Sam Wellman?
Oh, wait a minute. Maybe this makes sense. What did you do with the $300, Bob?
I saved it. They told me a lot of places I could blow it in town, but I didn't.
They did, huh?
Now, what's that got to do with it, Hoppy?
I'm not sure yet, but I got an idea. A coach was robbed at 8 o'clock. Where were you at that time, Bob?
That was about 30 minutes before I met the two men. I was at the trail quite a piece.
Alone. No alibi.
I guess not.
About a half hour after the robbery, you run onto Red and Sam and win $300 from them at poker. They figure, of course, you'll roll into town and blow it sky high. When did Salinger finally show up?
Well, I don't know. About 10, I guess.
And he turned you down?
Yeah. Say he didn't want any truck with jailbirds.
I see. Well, before we start out, I want you to know I'm going to give you every break I can. If you tell them the truth, I'll stand up with you against the whole town. If you're not...
I'm not worrying about that, Hoppy.
Okay, let's get going.
Where?
The blind turn on the stage road where the coach was robbed. Maybe we can find a few tracks. Bob?
Yeah?
You can check your gun here at the ranch house. California and I'll take care of any shooting that has to be done.
Any luck, Hoppy?
No, not a chance to find any tracks on the road here. Someone came through here with a bunch of cattle after it happened.
That was Salinger. That bunch of steers he just sold.
Tell me something, California.
Anything you want, Hoppy. My brain's at your service.
Well, harness it up for a minute. You planned to hold up the mail coach here. Where would you hide out?
Well, that's a cinch. Right behind the tree yonder.
That's what I thought. Come on.
Hey, I sit over there behind the tree.
Sure. So naturally, a smart bandit would hide up in those rocks above the turn.
Hop along, Cassidy, so help
Don't
me.
Don't get insulted, California. You got a wonderful pair of feet.
Pretty hard to find any tracks in these granite rocks, Hoppy.
Yeah, especially when the robber was careful not to make any. Getting pretty dark now, too. You got a match, Bob?
No, I don't carry him.
Oh. Well, no use looking around here in the dark. May as well ride over to that cottonwood grove of the creek. See if there's anything left of that campfire that you sat around.
No dice, Hoppy. There ain't a thing to show anyone's been here. Not a track, not a sign of a campfire.
But I told you the truth, Hoppy. I was here. Someone's cleaned the place up.
I know it.
Huh?
You mean you believe me?
I think I believed you from the first, Bob. Now I got proof.
But we ain't found a thing, Hoppy. Now how can you...
That's just it. Not what we found, it's what we didn't find.
What do you mean?
One of our line riders uses this place regularly. Built his fire right here in the clearing. The ashes would be here if someone didn't have a reason for cleaning them up. They knew Bob had come here with his story. They wanted to make a liar out of him.
You mean Sam and Red?
Yeah. And back there at the blind turn, we didn't find any tracks on that granite. But I found something else.
What was that?
That's why I asked you for that match. I never saw a cigarette smoker yet who didn't carry matches. One of the robbers left this behind.
Well, I'll be a cigarette butt.
Yeah.
You think it was Sam and Red?
And someone else. The man who planned the job. I can't think of a single reason why a man would drive a herd of cattle 6 miles out of the way. Unless there were some embarrassing tracks he wanted to cover up.
Lord almighty. Salinger.
That's right. Salinger.
Hoppy, amigo, you come here to my fiesta saloon once in the blue moon. The sarsaparilla, she is on me.
Nah, afraid I haven't time for a drink, Mike. I got a lot of things on my mind right now.
You tell Mike the sicko, eh? Maybe I help, quién sabe.
What do you know about selling you, Mike? Seems to me he was up against it for money for a while back.
Why do you ask, Hoppy?
It's pretty important right now. To a kid named Johnny McIver.
That kid, he make one big mistake when he killed Clem Yates.
You think he did it?
The whole town thinks so. His life, she's worth $2,000, maybe less.
You know why, Mike? Because the kid has a prison record.
Si.
He's the second man who came to Baker's Crossing with a record, Mike.
Si.
And he feels like you did when you got out. He wants to go straight with the people here to let him alone.
You have kept our secret well these 10 years, Hoppy. But why do you ask about Salinger?
Because I think you know how bad he needs money.
See, he tried to borrow $10,000 from me 2 weeks ago. His rancho, the Circle C, she's in one bad fix.
That's what I thought. He got his money, Mike.
Yeah? What do you mean?
He figured by shipping that cattle money express and robbing the stage, he'd collect from Wells Fargo, too. Nice way to double your money. He got a young ex-convict handy to take the blame.
Madre de Dios, you mean Salinger?
Yeah, with Red Conroy and Sam Wellman to give him a hand.
Hoppy, you can pull this?
There was one passenger on the stage, a girl named Ann Richard. I think she knows more than she's telling.
Oh, but the word of a young senorita against Salinger. No, she's no good, Hoppy. She's not enough.
Mike.
See?
That's just why I came to see you.
Before we continue with this exciting story, here is a word from your announcer.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Back to Hop Along, Cassidy, and Hoppy Takes a Chance. Hoppy is sure now that Shelby Salinger and his two henchmen engineered the robbery of the mail stage carrying his own money, knowing that Johnny McIver, a young ex-convict, would be blamed. But it's quite another matter to prove it. That's why Hoppy has called on Ann Richards, the one passenger on the stage during the robbery and the only living witness.
Please, Mr. Cassidy, that's all I know. It's just as I told the sheriff.
I tell you, I want to know the truth, Miss Richards. I want to know exactly what happened on that stage from the minute the driver pulled up at that blind corner.
But I've told you.
You told me what someone's forcing you to say.
Bobby.
Yeah?
Fred Conroy, standing across the street. I just seen him through the window.
I know.
Huh?
I made sure he saw me come here. Keep an eye on him.
Sure, Hoppy. Oh, I sure wish I knew what was going on.
You know what you're doing, Mr. Cassidy. He's watching this house. He'll do anything. Kill me. Anything.
Wait a minute, Miss Richards. I wonder if you know what you're doing.
I tell you, he'll kill me. Do you understand that? He'll stop at nothing.
Listen to me. You're the only witness to that robbery. Because you said so, they're out looking for one man instead of three. Because you said so, they'll hang Johnny McIver. Because he happens to have a prison record and no alibi.
I can't help it. I can't.
If you want it in plain English, Miss Richards, you're yellow. You're willing to let an innocent man hang to save your own skin.
But it's too late to do anything now. The people are ready to lynch him. I can't stop them. What can I do now?
You can tell me really what happened out there at that blind corner.
You're right, Mr. Cassidy. I guess I am a coward. I don't know. When they came here and threatened me.
Who?
Conroy and Wellman. They said they'd kill me if I didn't tell the story the way they wanted it.
Well, let's have it now.
There wasn't just one man, Mr. Cassidy. There were two.
Conroy and Wellman.
I think so. I couldn't identify them out there on the road. They wore masks. And one kept calling the other McIver.
I see.
I was inside the coach when they forced Clem Yates to get down. He was right next to the window. I heard him say, McIver? You're not McIver.
Then what?
That's when the shot came.
Hey, he's coming across the street.
There he is now. Get behind the door when I open it. You know what to do. Stay right here, Miss Richards.
Oh.
Ready? Let her rip.
Hello, Cassidy.
Conroy, what can I do for you?
I can talk better inside. Especially with a gun in my hand.
You think that's going to get you anywhere, Red?
Put your hands up, Cassidy. That's better.
You know, you got a bad habit. Messing around in things that ain't your business. And I'm going to break you of that right now. If
before you get your nose caught in somebody's keyhole. Keep those hands up, Cassidy. Do you hear what I... Oh.
Nice work, California.
Hit him too hard. My gun butt will never be the same.
Mr. Cassidy.
You see, Miss Richards, these tough guys aren't so bad when you use the right kind of diplomacy. Get some rope out back, California. We're going to truss this turkey up so that he won't come undone till roasting time.
Right, Huffy.
Why are you going through his pockets?
Ah, here we are.
A letter?
Yeah, it ought to be just what the doctor ordered. You see, Miss Richards, we can hook Red and Sam on your testimony. But there's no way we can touch Salinger. That is, unless either Red or Sam decide to talk.
They'll never do that. You don't know them, Mr. Cassidy.
And Miss Richards, you don't know Mike DeSico.
So, she's changed the story, Huck.
Yeah.
Well, bueno.
But not good enough. I want Salinger, too. And if she tells her story now, we'll lose any chance of getting him.
Wait.
Huh?
Don't turn around. The sheriff just came in.
Quick, take this.
Okay.
A letter Red Conroy wrote to a girl in Council City.
Ah, bueno.
Morning, Hoppy.
Oh, howdy, Sheriff. Anything new?
Been keeping mighty busy, Hoppy.
Me too. Got no business hanging around the fiesta here. Gotta get on back to the ranch.
Just a minute, Hoppy.
Huh?
Don't run off. But you might like to know Johnny McIver was spotted by a posseman an hour ago, riding line on the bar 20.
Which means what?
Which means you're under arrest, concealing and giving shelter to a public enemy. Sorry, Hoppy, but you're going to jail.
What can I do for you, gents?
Howdy. I'm California Carson. This here's Mike DeSico. I'd like to see Hopalong Cassidy, if you don't mind.
Well, I don't know. Sheriff said no one wants to see him.
What, Jay? That means why not in Mexico.
Already told you. Sheriff said no one wants to see him.
Well, nothing to do but wait until the sheriff gets back, eh?
I reckon so. Mind if we sit down?
Free country. Here's public property. Sit anywhere you please.
Gracias.
That means thanks in Mexico. You sit in the chair there, and Mike and I'll sit in this here packing box.
Excuse me a minute, gents. I just want to check up on the prisoner.
Mike, did you get a look at them cell keys hanging from his belt?
Did?
Can you get them?
Can I get them? At the age of 6, I was the second best pickpocket in Mexico City.
Who was the best?
My papa. We'll get him when he sits down. You pull the chair and grab his gun, no?
Here it comes.
Not the prison, mate, the fella says. Ain't never seen the baker's cross in jail, I reckon.
Poor old Hoppy. Wonder if he's had his dinner.
Oh, don't worry, Sheriff. We'll bring him something when he gets back. Say, you fellas play cards? Thought we might have a game while we're waiting. Got a deck right here someplace and draw the deck. Oh, yeah, here we are.
Maybe a little penny ante, no?
10th of a cent, I always play. Now...
Suffering snakes, sir. You hurt yourself?
Let me help you.
That chair went right out from under me. Don't know what happened.
Here, I'll give you a hand.
Foot slipped under the desk, caught on something down there. Now, what in tarnation?
What's the matter here? You're stuck.
Got my foot jammed in the spittoon. Trapped like a rat.
No dice. Let me get a new hold here.
That won't work neither. Only make my leg longer. Gotta move the desk.
Guess so. There she goes.
Confound it, get off of that foot, you crazy spittoon. Get off it.
Hey.
Ain't had a whirl like that since I stepped in the bar trap one winter in Montana. Let's get the desk back on her feet. Hey.
What's the matter?
Where's the other feller?
You mean Mike. Well, doggone, looks like he went.
Trying to pull the wool over my eyes, eh? He's back there at Cassidy's cell, that's where he is. I'll show that feller rules of rules.
Yeah, by golly, you show him.
Hey, you down there, dusting him off.
What'd you see?
Look at that. Door's open. Tag busted. He took my keys.
Well, I'll take a look inside. Maybe Hoppy's hiding under the bed or something.
I can't sound it. I can see, can't I? She's as empty as the day she was made. Hey! Over there! Open the door! Get me out of here! Get me out!
Hoppy!
Get me out of here!
Mike!
You got him?
Sure, I got him.
Come on, let's get going. Yeah, we haven't much time.
Wait a minute, you varmint. Some help me.
Adios, amigo.
Adios. What does that mean?
That's goodbye in Mexican.
It's my duty to see justice is done. That's why I've come out here to the Bar 20 after Johnny McIver. If he's found guilty by a jury after he's had a fair trial, he'll get the full punishment under the law. And not until...
We'll give you 5 minutes to turn him over, Sheriff.
Yes, just 5 minutes.
Getting mighty rough out there, Stellinger. Don't think we can hold out much longer.
He hasn't got a chance.
He don't deserve a chance.
The law says he gets a fair trial, Sam. That mob ain't gonna take him without a fight.
12 men against that mob out there? You're out of your mind, Sheriff.
You got any ideas, Sellinger?
Yeah. You went out on the porch there and grabbed their attention. The kid and I might be able to get away from the rear.
Say, that might work, Sheriff. If we could get him back to the jailhouse, we might be able to hold him off.
And if the mob spotted you?
Well, that's the chance we have to take.
Now back to Hopalong Cassidy.
I don't know about that, Sellinger. If you take Johnny McIver out the back way and make a run for it...
Now don't you see it's the only chance? And then your gut won't stand up against that mob for 2 minutes.
Well, I guess we'll have to try it. But an awful lot depends on you.
You just leave it to me, Sheriff, and things will turn out just fine.
I'll bring the kid in. Come here, McIver. I want to... Cassidy!
Hello, Sheriff.
What are you doing here?
Oh, I got kind of bored down at the jail. Hello, Sellinger. And Sam Wellman. Welcome to Bar 20. You're just in time for the payoff.
What are you talking about, Cassidy?
This.
What's that?
A little billy do from your pal Red Conroy. Starts out, the following is my true and complete confession on the holdup and murder at the Blind Turn at 8 o'clock on the night of September 12th.
Let me see that.
Not so fast, Sellinger. Want to take a look at it, Sheriff?
Yeah.
It's a trick.
Shut up, Sellinger. It's Red Conroy's handwriting, all right. Gotta tell it a mile away.
What did you do with him, Cassidy?
He's taking it easy in town.
And while I stood guard at the bend, Sam Wellman walked up to Clem Yates.
It's a lie! Conroy killed you! Shut up, Sam! That double-crosser ain't gonna frame me, and you ain't either, Sellinger. I never pulled a trigger, Sam!
Get away from him, Sellinger!
Sellinger shot the driver, Sheriff! It's the truth, or else I was keeping watch!
And it was Red who walked up to Clem Yates, huh?
Yeah, yeah!
Stay where you are, Sellinger! Keep your hands up!
I'll get you for this, Wellman, so help me,
or... You ain't getting anyone now, Sellinger. You're gonna turn around while I march the two of you out on the porch. Read this confession to the crowd. Come on now. Get going.
Did it work, Hoppy?
Yeah. We're going out on the porch.
It was a mite too close for me, Hoppy.
Me too, California.
How about me?
You got a clean slate now, Bob. From here on in, it's up to you. And you can thank Mike here for small favors.
Oh, it was nothing, amigo. As they say in Mexico, la cuerda se rompe por lo más delgado. The rope she break at the weakest point is verdad, no?
Yeah. And we all have another secret to keep, eh, Mike?
What's that, Hoppy?
That confession of Red Conroy's. Or maybe you didn't know that Mike DeSico, in his heyday, was the best forger west of the Mississippi.
It's mighty peaceful at the Bar 20 now that this Johnny McIver affair is over, but somehow things never stay that way for very long. Hoppy in California will be riding into more dangerous adventure real soon.
From February 19th of 1950, it's been Hopalong Cassidy with Hoppy Takes a Chance. In a moment, we'll enjoy some suspense with The Subway, as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The golden age of radio. Continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, was first heard on CBS in June of 1942 with The Burning Court. It was on the air for the next 20 years under many talented directors. Each brought his own mark to Suspense, making it one of the most diverse, unusually broad-based shows of the air. Suspense dealt in life-or-death situations. That element was usually established within the first few moments. Then, through characterization and audio coloring, little touches were added to heighten the sensation of impending doom. That's what Suspense was all about, the slow tightening of the knot. Suspense was largely known as an actor's theater. People like Cary Grant, Frederick March, Charles Laughton, Humphrey Bogart, Lucille Ball, Olivia de Havilland, Gregory Peck, Peter Lorre, Henry Fonda, and Orson Welles headed the casts. Many top film stars were asked to return for encore performances. Early in the program, a general format was established and it stuck throughout. Suspense opened to the ringing of soft church bells intermingled with stinging music. By the fall of its first year, Joseph Kearns, the grim-voiced fellow known as the Man in Black, was aboard as narrator. That continued through the Roma Wine years with Truman Bradley, another of radio's most distinguished voices, doing the commercials. The Man in Black had disappeared by the time the show went to 60 minutes in 1948. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear with Suspense and the Subway from October of 1947. Another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
Suspense. Starring June Habit in Subway, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed by William Spear.
The subway always gets me. I have to stand back from the edge of the platform when a train's coming in because, well, heights don't bother me or closed-in places or any of those other things that give some people the willies. No. No, with me, it's the subway. The shining tracks and the train roaring in out of the black. I always make myself stand way back when I'm waiting. That's how it started that night. I instinctively drew back when I saw the gleaming white headlight appear in the tunnel, rushing toward me out of the dark. I made myself draw back. But what I really wanted to do was to throw myself in front of that train. The lights on the shining rails hypnotized me like the gleaming eyes of a snake. In a panic, but that mob, that 5 o'clock mob, poured in behind me and shoved and pulled me with it. I'd been pushed around all day, and I had this awful cold. And I hated everybody. That's a terrible thing to say, I guess, but that's the way I felt, like committing murder. Oh, I was so tired, so worn out, my feet felt glued to my shoes. And of all the people in the world I didn't want to see, wouldn't that just have to be the night I was shoved right next to Ruth Carney?
Paula, Stephen! Where have you been keeping yourself? I haven't seen you since the Academy.
Hello, Ruth.
My favorite actress. What are you doing these days?
Oh, nothing. I worked in a drugstore for a while.
Drugstore? You haven't deserted the theater, have you?
I'm afraid I have.
You, with all your talents.
Ruth, I can't seem to find anything.
But you, of all of us. Well, you can't give up. You were so intense about it. Did you try some massage?
Try? I tried to get on all right, but...
Yes, I know. I had to pay for the privilege of appearing in a summer theater. I did the Westport season. Prentice, you know. Oh, it was wonderful fun. And it's well worth it to me to be able to say I'd had professional experience.
Well, that's fine. If you can afford it.
Oh, it's awful the way you have to have money for everything these days.
Yes, it is. Oh, don't get too close to me, Ruth. I have the most awful sore throat. I just...
And if you don't have money, you have to have pull, don't you? Oh, and speaking of pull, have you heard about me?
No, I haven't.
I'm general understudy for Night Laster, the producer.
John C. Whitner?
Yes, he was an old friend of Dad's. He used to come over to dinner when I was little. I'd hear them talk about the theater, and I thought there'd be nothing in the world like being an actress. Such fun. All that glamour and all the sensational parties and everybody's
such
gay.
Fun.
And the press.
Not the acting. Not the thrill of working at something you wanted to do so much that not doing it makes you not want to live. No. Oh, no. It's such fun. And parties. Wearing expensive suits like the one she had on. Ruth chattered on and I looked at her. The subway stopped. More people got on. Still more. More. Seemed as though they'd never stopped getting on. Someone would grab the doors and hold them open, and they kept trying to close them. A fat man chewing a horrible cold cigar stub pushed me still closer to Ruth, and I jumped as something sharp stuck into my side. I was puzzled for a moment, and then I remembered the scissors Mother had asked me to get for her. They were very sharp, and they'd ruined my purse. But it didn't make any difference. It was all like everything else I had. I closed my hand over the scissors and I held them tightly so they wouldn't do any more damage. And then, I don't know why, I found myself staring at Ruth's hat. It was so smart, so expensive, so everything that mine wasn't. I found myself hating Ruth's hat.
Well, as I was saying, after Dad died, Mr. Rittner stopped coming over so often. So when I got bored with the academy, I hopped right down to his office and I said, Mr. Rittner, do you remember Henry Connors? Well, I'm his daughter, Ruth. I want to be an actress. Of course, I don't expect this part right away, but maybe if I could get a walk-on or something. Oh, imagine my nerve, Paula. Saying that to a big producer like John C. Rittner. But anyway, that's what I did. And do you know what he said to me?
No. No, what did he say to me?
He said, Ruth, I admire your spunk. And if you're half as good an actress as your father was a set designer, you'll be all right. And he hired me, just like that.
And you're general understudy.
That's me. But no one's ever been sick. Confidentially, I'm glad.
You're glad?
Oh, yes. You see, I've never gotten up in any of the parts like I'm supposed to. If I ever had to go on, actually go on,
I tell you, I get away with murder. Murder? I couldn't look at her face. I didn't even want to look at any of the passengers' faces. And when I raised my eyes, I saw still more faces simpering down at me from advertisements overhead. I hated everybody and everything. I turned and looked outside the windows. The wet, slimy darkness was roaring past like black death. One faulty switch, one obstruction on the tracks could bring it crashing in on all of us. And who would be the losers? Not Ruth with her silly chatter. Not these other passengers with their tired, blank faces. And not me. Oh, certainly not me. My own tired, blank face was reflected in the window pane, gray and thin. And it didn't seem out of place shimmering in that air of black death just outside.
This is a wonderful man, really, Paula. You should meet him. Matter of fact, well, I hadn't meant to tell you this. I didn't want to build your hopes up, but I told him about you.
About me?
Yes. You know, I always did think you had loads of talent. So I told him one day, I told him, Mr. Rittner, if anything ever happens to me, I mean, should you decide to give me a real part in your new show, I don't worry about who'll general understudy Night Laughter. I know just the girl, Paula Stevens.
Good. You told him that?
Yes. And if the time ever comes and I have to leave, well, he knows your name and everything. But don't build up your hopes, honey. He hasn't a part for me in the new show.
Oh.
And as far as anything happening to make me quit, well, there isn't the slightest chance.
Envy and hatred welled up so in me that my throat burned like fire. And the fat man with that cigar was leaning against me, and I lashed out like a drowning person.
Hey, watch it, lady, watch it.
I took it out on him. Who I really wanted to knock out of my way was Ruth. Ruth standing between me and the break I'd dreamed of. Understudy in a hit show. But she had said, well, don't build up your hopes, honey. There isn't the slightest chance. But wasn't there the slightest chance? I thought, the slightest chance of something happening to her. Started up again, jolted me so that I was thrown sickeningly against Ruth. My fingers were testing the points of the scissors in my bag. No one could see me. We were packed in too solidly. The scissors were sharp and cold and long. Yes, they seemed long enough. I kept my eyes on the dim lights and dirty concrete and tiles of the station we sped through as the train throbbed along uptown. I was holding the scissors as though they were a weapon. I was suddenly sure that at some time or another, scissors had been used as a weapon. The scissors in my bag seemed to grow bigger with an idea. Idea and scissors. Scissors and idea. They were increasing in size. The ache in my throat has gone up into my ears, too. Throbbing. Keeping time with the throbbing of the subway. I looked away from the blackness outside and stared up at the white light of the ceiling. The electric fan overhead was suspended like a spider. Suspended like a spider. Like a spider that was spinning. No, not spinning as a spider should spin, but whirling. Yes, that was it, whirling. Like my brain was whirling. Ruth?
Yes?
You play on Sundays, don't you?
Oh, yes.
No show tonight, then. Ruth, why don't you come home and eat with me? There's just Mother and me. We'll be all alone.
Oh, I'd love to, Paula. Frankly, I didn't have anything to look forward to but a boring evening. I'm glad now I couldn't find a taxi.
Well, Mother will be very glad to see you.
That was very sweet of you to ask me. I haven't had a home-cooked meal in a long time.
A casual invitation after a casual meeting. No one knew that Ruth was coming to my house for dinner. Ruth didn't even know where I lived. Get her off the subway a few stations early. Many empty lots up this way. Then one thrust of these sharp scissors, ordinary scissors, brand new scissors, and a body in an empty lot. And after a few days, after the funeral, a humble application to Mr. John C. Rittner for my girlfriend's job. He'd remember I'd been recommended by Ruth herself. Oh, and I'll show them. I'll know every line perfectly. And one night the star will not go on. No, I'll go on. That will be it. The noise outside didn't seem like the roar of a subway anymore. It was like tremendous applause. Applause for me.
Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you June Havoc in Subway, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now, Roma Wines bring back to our Hollywood soundstage June Havoc, starring as Paula Stevens, with Lurene Tuttle as Ruth in Subway, a play well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Summer Station, 116th Street, I guess it was. I remember I studied Ruth with new, cold interest. I was certainly stronger than she. She wouldn't be expecting anything. Besides, she wouldn't know how to struggle. Things had always come easily to her. She was so wrapped up in her own affairs, she just chattered away.
Oh, it's been the most fun getting those checks every week and never having to lift a finger to earn them. If they ever catch up with me...
The breaks go to girls like Ruth. Who think that being an actress is great fun. And others who really, truly love the film. They never get a chance. There's no way for them to make their own breaks. Not very often, anyway. But I had a way in my purse that night. I could get Ruth's job. It belonged to an actress, not her. It belonged to me. To me. We got the logo here. We're coming in now.
No.
We pushed and elbowed and jostled our way out of the car. We were the last ones out. So we had to turn around and face the tracks with a solid mob at our back. It made me nervous. I hated to stand so near the edge. There was no way to get to the middle of the platform without bullying my way through. And I didn't want to have to explain to Ruth how I felt. But I managed to get my feet placed an inch or so in back of her as we stood wedged in the crowd. That made me feel a little better. Ruth between me and the tracks. Ruth between me and my destiny. Ruth, always in the way. Just A little push, I thought. Maybe it would be easier. A little push just before our train came in and...
Paula, look at that man over there. Doesn't he remind you of Bill?
Well, yes. Yes, he does.
How is Bill, by the way?
Oh, Bill's fine.
You still going with him?
Yes.
Oh, he's a wonderful guy, that Bill. I remember one time...
I remembered, too. I remembered how Ruth had tried to take Bill away from me once. She'd done everything in her power. And there for a while, I thought she was going to succeed, too. But she hadn't. He was too nice. He wasn't the type to care if a girl couldn't dress in the latest styles and if she didn't have the smartest hats.
I knew him first, you know.
Yes, I know you did.
He used to date me before he knew you. He was just a kid, of course, and I got interested in another boy. But believe me, when I ran into Bill about a year ago, I couldn't help thinking that maybe I'd made a mistake in giving him up so easily.
You didn't give him up too easily.
Oh, yes, I did. Much easier than I would now if I had it to do all over again. You're very serious about him, aren't you?
Yes, very.
You take everything pretty seriously, don't you, Paula?
Ruth was standing on the edge, and she wasn't laughing anymore. She was staring at me in a very peculiar way. She moved around in back of me. And now I was on the edge. In spite of myself, I looked down at the gleaming rails. Two long silver ribbons pointing toward the black hole where the platform broke off and the walls closed in. And the train was approaching. I watched the tracks fascinated. I waited for the hypnotic gleam of the headlights to make the rails sparkle and shine and beckon to me. And then the headlights beamed at me out of the void. At me, me. It was a great warm spotlight. And I swayed over the edge to meet it. And I couldn't stop myself.
Paula!
Oh, the train was in. I was shaking. Ruth's arms were around me, holding me tight. She pulled me back just before I might have... I should have jumped.
What's the matter, Paula? You nearly fell right in front of that train. Are you ill now?
No, I'm just dizzy. I'm all right now. Thanks for holding me, Ruth. I don't think I really would have fallen, though. Come on, let's get in the car.
It looks like you were weak or something. You could do with some food. I'll bet you didn't have lunch.
No, I didn't. I forgot. But we'll be home soon.
I'm starved myself. I'll certainly be glad to get to your place.
Oh, I hated her worse than ever. What right did she have to pull me back if I wanted to jump? What business is hers? Oh, I felt. I felt the scissors in my purse. I wrapped my handkerchief around the handle. No fingerprints, no clues, no motive. Nothing that would be connected with me. A friend that hadn't seen her in ages. And what motive could I have? All I wanted was a job, and nobody would ever think that I had committed murder to get a job. People just didn't do things like that. Not unless they were desperate and bitter with nothing to lose.
I think we can grab a couple of seats in a minute. Those two men are getting off. Wouldn't you think they'd have offered them to us in the first place? Really, men in New York?
I followed her lead, and we got the seats. And I sat down very carefully, like an old woman. I hadn't sat down all day. Just walked from one office to another. Oh, the muscles in my back and legs ached. I had to sit in an upright position. The warm blood came rushing upward as I lifted first one foot and then the other gingerly off the floor. The arches ached with relief. My head swam. I was so grateful just to be able to sit. Oh, grateful. To think that the simple act of sitting down could mean so much to me. Paula Stevens, the most promising actress at the Academy a few years ago. Now nobody would even give me a walk-on. I turned and I stared at Ruth. I thought, maybe I won't wait for the empty lot.
Paula! What's the matter with you? Here we are, sitting down and comfortable, and you're frowning like a bear with a sore tooth. What are you frowning about?
I looked around desperately for something I could be frowning at. A man across the aisle was reading a newspaper, and I saw a headline. That could be making me frown. I indicated it.
Oh, you mean the headline?
Yes.
Hit and run driver kills child. Oh, that is nasty. Makes me sick to see things like that. I never read them. Does it affect you that way?
Yes, the lowest form of humanity. And suddenly the train shot out of the underground onto the trestle, out of darkness into the twilight of a tenement street. The moment before, nothing could be seen through the dirty car windows but the reflection of your own drawn face. But then the ramshackle apartment buildings flashed by outside, showing intimate glimpses of bare kitchens and dim bedrooms, gray wash and cheap living rooms, families going through the functions of living, poor families, tragic living. From the blackness of the tunnel to the twilight of poverty, from death to life, first death and then life. Kept pace with the subway, not life, then death, but death to life. Death brings another kind of life. Not necessarily sordid life like this, but new life. Death makes room for somebody else to live. One death for another life. Ruth's death for my new life.
You know, I've been thinking about that headline, too. I mean, the one about the hit-and-run driver. I suppose I do get panicky.
It's still the lowest form of humanity.
Still and all, I think I can understand how it could happen to anybody. You're driving along, maybe thinking of something else, maybe going a little too fast. You know what I mean. You're just anxious to get someplace in a hurry, and you're out watching what's ahead. And all of a sudden, bingo, you hit something.
Does that mean you shouldn't stop and...
Well, you don't know what you hit. Oh. Maybe it's just an old fridge or a pile of junk. Isn't necessarily a kid or a dog, even. You just don't know. And if you stop and look, you may find you're a murderer. Yes, but if you keep on, you can tell yourself it was just an old piece of junk and go on your way. Now, I can understand a hit-and-run driver. Yes, I can.
Oh, why was she raving about a hit-and-run driver? She wore the subject ragged. Well, I thought anyway, it won't be much longer now. I won't have to listen to her much longer anyway. One more station and we'd get out. She wouldn't know it wasn't my station yet. And then we'd walk over by the lot, cut across it in the dark. But this is one hard plunge. And back to the subway for the rest of my ride. Alone. Why, I wouldn't even be late for supper. Subway empty a little. Seemed to be flying through the night, carrying me on dark wings toward my first chance at being something. We were going awfully fast. Too fast. You know what I mean? You're anxious to get someplace, and bingo, you hit something. A pile of junk. It has to be junk. An obstruction to be cleared away for something more important passing by. But if I should stop and look... It's a girl. Like me. But it's a girl dead in an empty lot. This was our station. This was it.
Did we get out here, Paula?
I was looking at her, Ruth. An obstruction in my path. I had stopped and I had looked at her.
What's the matter, Paula? I thought this was it. Don't we get out here?
I had stopped to look, and I had seen that she was a girl, a human being.
Paula, you said we were supposed to get off here.
Yes. Yes, Ruth. Yes. The train started away without us. Somehow it seemed to run more smoothly, as though its wings were light instead of dark. And I was strangely rested. My mind was blank, and I rolled the blankness around, and I tasted it. I swallowed, and my mouth, and my throat, it felt better. Balls of yesterday's newspapers scurried off the platform and flattened themselves in the corners, and...
I'll be glad to get there.
Oh, yes.
I'm starved.
Ruth was a girl. She was a human being. Everybody on that subway was an individual human being. And I had to drive according to the rules. I couldn't hit and run. How could I have ever thought that I could? If I had to get there the hard way, well, I could take it.
This way, Paula?
Yes. Yes, this way, Ruth. Into the light. I climbed the ramp to the street exit with a new bounce in my feet. I felt in my purse, only to wrap my handkerchief carefully around the scissor point, not the handle. I couldn't afford to completely ruin my already damaged bag. And Ruth was chattering again. Soon we'd be home. And as she chattered, I thought, Ruth's older than I, but she seems like a child. She'll probably never grow up. But I did. That night, arm in arm with Ruth, we walked past an empty lot. And I never even thought of looking back.
Tonight's suspense play was by Eileen Douglas Walzer and Mel Dinelli.
From October 30th of 1947, it's been Suspense and the Subway. Well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for today, but tune in again next week, and why not invite a friend to listen to more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those thrilling days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show.
SSR DB San Francisco, where the big bands swing.